coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borag Thung, Earthlets, welcome to another edition of the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I am Molchar, the publicity droid for 2000 AD, and we have a two-part special for you, because you may have seen the teaser on the 2000 AD Facebook page at the top, and also on the 2000 AD website with what looks like a Judge Dredd shield with the date 17th June on it. That is because on 17th of June, the Judge Dredd magazine is getting a makeover. Magazine 361 is the ideal time for new readers to come on board with our monthly sister title, with a fresh look and four new stories starting inside. Now, if you like your comic book reading in a bumper monthly burst, because I know not everyone is into the whole weekly comics thing, then the Judge Dredd magazine is the ideal way to get your Judge Dredd fix and a great mix of content, because there's interviews in there and text stories alongside the comics. So it's a lot more Dredd focused. So in the coming issue, there's a brand new Dredd World series set in the Britain of 2137. There's Dredd himself heading out into the cursed Earth, and there's also a brilliant series set on a frontier world, which mixes westerns with the judge system. And there's also a brand new standalone creator-owned non-Dredd series from one of the UK's most unique talents. So what have we got coming up in Magazine 361? Well, there's Judge Dredd El Maldito, which for those of you who speak Spanish, you will know what that means, and that's by Gordon Rennie and Carlos Esquerra. We are going to be talking to Gordon and Carlos in this Thrillcast about El Maldito and how it harks back to the very dawn of 2000 AD. We have Storm Warning, a story called The Relic. Now, Storm Warning is a brand new series created by Leah Moore, John Repian and Tom Foster, who's one of our newest artists. And that's set in, like I said, the Britain of Judge Dredd's world, where one of their Psi Division's more prickly operatives, Lillian Storm, is a psychically powerful judge with the ability to talk to the dead, which can be just as much of a curse as it is a blessing. We also have the return of Lawless. Now, I know there's been quite a bit of feedback, particularly on our social media, about Lawless. Colonial Marshal Meta Lawson, who's been appointed to the frontier town of Bad Rock on the planet 43 Rega, immediately has her work cut out because it's, well, completely lawless, and she is there with minimal resources to keep the peace. It's a great series, amazing artwork by Phil Winslade. We're going to be talking to the minds behind Lawless next week's episode. And the fourth new story in Judge Dredd magazine 361 is Demon Nick by Paul Grist, who's well known in the UK for things like his police series Kane and superhero series Jack Staff. He's going to be talking to us about Demon Nick and how being a demon with a soul can leave you being the odd one out. Plus, if you're a fan of some old-school thrills, then the magazine comes with a bagged copy of a classic story. And with Magazine 361, it's the second volume of Pat Mills' series Finn, which is about a pagan warlock eco-terrorist fighting to save the planet from multinational corporations run by powerful aliens called Newts. So by day, he's a Cornish minicab driver, and at night, he is a white witch fighting aliens by using high-grade military equipment alongside things like A Hand of Glory and various other things. If you were reading 2000 AD in the 90s, or indeed Crisis, where the character began in a strip called The Third World War, then that is definitely something that you need to be checking out. Now, we have such a bumper couple of episodes that we're just going to crack on with the interviews. First off, we're going to talk to writer Gordon Rennie and Carlos Esquerra, not strangers to the Thrillcast, about their new Judge Dredd story beginning in the magazine Judge Dredd El Maldito. Now, joining us on, as it turns out, WhatsApp, all the way from Spain, we have Carlos Esquerra. Welcome back to the Thrillcast, Carlos.
Oh, hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We've had one or two technical issues getting through to the Iberian Peninsula, but now we're here, now we're talking. This is excellent. Right. So we're talking about Judge Dredd magazine 361, and you're drawing a strip by Gordon Rennie, a Judge Dredd strip, El Maldito.
Yes.
Which, for those who know their British comics history, is loosely based on a strip that you did in the 1970s for Battle Picture Weekly. Do you want to tell us a bit about El Mestizo, the character that that you drew back in 1977?
Yes, well, it's El Mestizo. It was is like a half-breed guy caught in the middle of the American Civil War.
Mm.
And he was like a mercenary. Also, he didn't mind for whom he worked, you know.
Yeah.
And it was a good character. It was done with Alan Hebden, the same writer he wrote Major Easy.
Mm.
And but I think maybe the story was a little bit too advanced for the 70s.
Right. Well,
it was a black character.
Yeah.
And well, I suppose, and then the white, they were more or less bad buddies, and he was the good guy. So a bit too much for the 70s, maybe.
Yeah, and it was quite unusual in Battle Picture Weekly, because Battle was mostly World War II stories. I mean, you mentioned Major Easy there, who was one of the most popular characters. Why did you decide? Because in 1977, you created Judge Dredd with John Wagner, and you'd had some disagreements with editorial about how they had debuted the character without you, and you decided to do El Maldito for Battle Picture Weekly. What did the character mean to you at the time?
Well, it's another character that I really liked it very much, more or less on the same vein as it was Major Easy. Well, practically almost all the characters I've done, I really like all of them. You know, it's because if any character I don't like it, normally I don't draw it. You know, I don't
do
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it's very important to understand the character and to go inside the character. So in that way, I know how he moves, how the expression, and how he will react in front of any circumstances.
Mm.
And that is very, very important for me. If I don't understand the character, I prefer not to do the story.
That's interesting, because there's a lot of moral ambiguity about characters such as Mayor Easy and El Mestizo and Judge Dredd and Johnny Alpha in Strontium Dog, where, you know, they're the anti-heroes, they're the dark guys. Are you saying that you kind of identify with that?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's because I come from the 60s and all the kind of the spaghetti western.
Mm.
That, I think, marked my generation quite a lot. And the spaghetti western was just the answer to all those films like, John Wayne and company, you know, that the good guy was really good and the baddies, they were really bad.
Yeah.
So as in the spaghetti western, it changed everything. The good, it was not so good, and the bad could be not so bad. You know, it's more like in real life.
Mm, mm. Now, El Maldito ran in Battle Picture Weekly, which eventually was closed down. But all these years later, you and Gordon Rennie are bringing back the spirit of this Mexican outlaw from the American Civil War in El Maldito in Judge Dredd magazine.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us a bit about how that came about?
Yes, El Maldito means the cursed one, the cursed one.
Yeah.
And it was Gordon Rennie told me about it. I was interested, and we just talked a little bit, and that it was the way it came. I must say that more than based on El Mestizo,
mm-hmm.
I think has more similarity with El Zorro.
Oh, right.
Yes, it's more that kind of character in the one who, that appear in Just Dread.
Right, right.
So it's a mixture in between several of them, but I think it's more have more coincidence with El Zorro than with El Mestizo.
So a little bit more dashing outlaw than the kind of dark mercenary in a war-torn place.
Yes, El Maldito is not a mercenary. It's just, as I say, it's like a Zorro helping the poor people that is around him. You know that all these people are against a big corporation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more, as I say, the kind of fighter for the underdog, you know?
Sure, sure. And, I mean, it wouldn't be a Judge Dredd strip if it wasn't bringing him into contact with the great lawman himself. What's it been like finally, considering all the history between El Mestizo and Judge Dredd, what's it like sort of having those two kinds of personalities, those two kind of characters coming together for the first time?
Yeah, well, it's a class in between them because one is the law, Just Dredd,
yeah,
and the other one is helping the people without any following any law at all. You know, just following the humanity, and then there is the class between the two of them. And well, it was quite a nice thing to put both together. And because the good thing is in the some of the stories is the cursed is very interesting because you can put there any character you want.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very wide landscape that it can be covered, and it can be El Maldito, and it can be whatever you want to do, it has place in there to be.
I mean, you mentioned earlier spaghetti westerns, and The Cursed Earth is just perfect for that kind of western style outlaw, anything is possible kind of story, isn't it?
Yes, and yeah, it's the kind of post-apocalyptic story, you know, like yes, it's anything could happen there, you know. It's a place where the law is not. Law only from time to time a judge, like in this time Dredd, can be lost in there, but only for a very small time, and so it's practically a land without no law at all, you know.
Sure, sure. And it's been a while since you've worked with Gordon on anything. What was that like?
Oh, I love to work with Gordon, and I really, especially when we were doing the Coburn stories, I really enjoy it, and you know, it was fun to do it, and it was a pity that then everything stopped.
Yeah,
because as I say, you know, I was really enjoying the stories, and especially the first ones, you know, and it was fun.
Yeah, sure, sure. Now, you've just come off a long stretch on Strontium Dog with John Wagner for 2000 AD. Is it always nice coming back to Judge Dredd, or is Johnny Alpha your first love? Because I think when I came to Spain a few years ago to interview you, you referred to Johnny as your son. Which is your favourite of the two characters?
Well, both are my sons. No, but yeah, my favorite is to do it is Strontium Dog more sure. than Just Dredd, and because it's well, it's more fun. It's more the anti-hero, and it's fun to do it. You know, it's, and I really enjoy it. It's a more human character than Just Dredd, and. Yeah, I really enjoy doing it in this kind of feeling, Western feeling, and especially now, after all that, the life and death of Johnny Alpha, that the story is finished now, and now Johnny is back to his own self, you know, is more adventures per se.
Sure.
You know, that is more fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it certainly seems, particularly in that last episode of the most recent story, that the Sticks Fix, that you seem to be having fun with that wonderful opening page of Johnny just taking that gun and blazing his way through the spaceship.
Yeah. Yes, and you know, just wait for the next one. It's fantastic. It's because Johnny is a great. I think maybe he's the best screenwriter in the UK and almost for me. Practically almost all the world.
Right, brilliant. In about a month's time, you're going to be one of the guests of honour at the San Diego Comic Convention, which is promising to be a great show. I mean, you've been working in British comics for a long time. Were you surprised to hear from the show that you were being chosen as one of the guests of honours or was it more kind of about time?
No, it was for me it was quite a surprise, because normally I never considered myself that I have a lot of followers in the States.
Right.
And so also I was very surprised when a couple of years back I was nominated for the Will Eisner Award.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was even bigger surprise for me. Normally, everything that comes from the state is surprise for me, because I never been. I don't think I've been extremely popular in there, but you never know.
Well, I think probably it's got to do with the sheer amount of influence you've had on the industry. Because I mean, co-creating characters like Judge Dredd, that has given so many of the people who've gone on to be, you know, very popular megastars in the States. Without that opportunity, yeah. Then you know, and I don't think you'll ever be lacking in a huge fandom in the UK. I think that's a certainty. But it should be a fantastic show.
Yeah. Well. Yes. I suppose so. And in the States, the closest I was maybe before to get a little bit more of being known by the people, it was with my work with Garth Ennis.
Yes, absolutely.
Just a Pilgrim and the war stories and that kind of stuff. But it's the kind of people that is addressed, that is very small section of the comic world people.
Hmm.
So everything that came to me from a big convention or in the state of something like this, it's always a big surprise.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to hosting you at the 2000 AD booth. That's pretty much all we've got time for, because we've got so many interviews to get through. I'd love to chat more, obviously, and no doubt we'll have you back on the Thrillcast in the future. But I want to say a huge thank you for coming back on, and really looking forward to reading El Medito.
Okay, thank you very much, Michael, and well, my love to everybody who is listening to this.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Take care now. Bye bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Now, the writer on El Medito is Gordon Rennie, who has been on the Thrillcast before, but we're very pleased to welcome him back. Welcome to the Thrillcast again, Gordon.
Oh, hey, Mike.
Hey. So we've talked to Carlos about El Medito. Tell us a bit about the genesis of the script, because we discussed with him about the connection with El Mestizo back in Battle Picture Weekly. But where did the idea come to have this character in a new Judge Dredd strip?
Well, originally Carlos wanted to do more Cursed Earth Coburn, which is a character he and I created about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Based on his old Major Easy character they did for Battle, which was a British war comic from the 70s. I think it was Carlos's first British work, long before 2000 AD. And I knew Carlos always liked the character, so that's why we did it. We updated him with Cursed Earth Coburn. So Carlos wanted to do more Coburn, but I felt the character had kind of reached the end of his path, really, with me anyway.
Yeah.
I didn't want to let Carlos down, because I always enjoy working with him. So I suggested we do something similar with Carlos's most favourite character I think they've ever created, which was, I can't remember his name, not El Mariachi, it's El...
Mestizo.
Yes, that's it, yeah. Who was a Western strip in battle. He lasted one series, as far as I know. It wasn't popular. Because I think it was so different. It was set in the American Civil War, and the main character was an escaped slave in Mexico. And I think it was just too offbeat.
Yeah.
But I know Carlos really liked it, especially with the whole kind of Latin American feel to it, and being Spanish. So I suggested we do an update of that for the Dread Universe, again set in the Cursed Earth, which is a natural place for these kind of Western things.
Yeah.
And we talked about it a bit, and that's where El Maldito, the cursed one, comes from.
Right, right, okay. And obviously, he's going to be encountering Judge Dredd. I asked Carlos what it was like, these two characters, because there was a bit of argy-bargy back then about Carlos going off to work on El Maldito because the way he was treated on Judge Dredd. It seems interesting for the characters to now kind of meet in a way.
I think that Carlos, that's why I really attracted Carlos to the idea to do his favourite old character with Dredd, you know, this iconic character that he created as well.
Yeah. And how did you go about kind of merging? Because Dredd's a very different strip to how it was back in the early days when you had titles like Battle Picture Weekly and things like that. How have you kind of updated how these two characters in would interact?
Setting in the Cursed, a lot of my Cursed Earth stories always seem to involve the supernatural. It's like a primal, iconic landscape where weird stuff can happen, does happen, especially in the stories I tend to do. So it seemed a natural place to set it. So El Maldito is he's a legendary figure, it's kind of like a Zorro-like Avenger that appears and helps the oppressed of the Cursed Earth. And he's up against a mega corporation, basically, that's working for the Justice Department to produce food in the aftermath of the Day of Chaos. Right. So he's got a severe food shortage. So these people have sort of been oppressed and worked to death and exploited. And the city doesn't really care that much as long as the food's coming through at a cheap price. It's very sent to investigate when there's... El Maldito, this character who may or may not exist, is blamed for deaths of the overseers of the company in the town. There's a kind of worker uprising against them. So Dredd sent to investigate why food production has dropped.
Yeah.
And then will or won't meet this character who may or may not exist, El Maldito, the supernatural legendary figure of the Cursed Earth.
Right. Yeah, I mean that you've already mentioned westerns, and Carlos talks about enjoying spaghetti westerns. I mean that's a plotline straight out of a 1970s western movie, really, isn't it?
Yeah, with something like Pale Rider or something like that. The ghostly gunfighter that comes to sort out all the wrongs. That's the sort of figure that Maldito is.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, it's the first time that you've worked with Carlos in a while. Was it nice to just kind of pick up that relationship again, and particularly over something that means so much to him?
It was great. I mean, sadly, I think it's the last Dredd I'll ever do. I haven't written any since then.
Right.
Quite well now. I kind of decided I wanted to move on from Dredd, but it seemed a good way to finish it was to work on Carlos.
Yeah.
With Carlos. So I was very happy about that. But sad probably that I possibly won't work with Carlos again unless, we ever do anything new.
Okay. And in terms of what people can expect from the strip, I mean, you've already talked about how, the character may or may not be there and what will Dredd encounter. Is there fun to be had from kind of messing with Dredd's very straightforward perception of the world by having things perhaps even he can't understand?
There's more... who Dredd thinks he's in the side of. First of all, he arrives to help the company. And your wife, food production drops. You know, he's getting into the city. And then it becomes obvious to him who the bad guys really are in this situation. It's not El Maldito and the kind of rioting workers. It's the company itself.
Yeah.
So it's who will he side with, in the end.
So there's is there any kind of slight kind of political satirical comment on the current times, or is it a very much a classic kind of, you know?
There's no obvious satirical pops there. It's just you know, big business is bad and workers' rights and things like that, and just kind of that kind of 19th century exploitation vibe is going through. You know, I wasn't doing any direct comparisons with now. It's kind of, you know, those 19th century robber barons in the American West.
Sure.
That's the sort of vibe to it.
I mean, did you read things like Battle back in the day? Was that something that was on your reading?
Yes,
list?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. Okay. I don't remember. To my shame, I don't remember the original strip at all. It might have passed me by, or I didn't read it then. But I certainly remember Major Easy and Rat Pack and all these kind of classic. Carlos working from Rat Pack as well. You know, I definitely remember seeing Carlos's work.
Wonder, you know, what is it like all these years later, you know, not just working with the guy, but actually having, you know, a bit of history, having read that stuff when you were younger?
Well, it's great. I mean, I'm not a huge fanboy that goes on about what a privilege it is to work with so-and-so and stuff. The only person I've ever really, really been kind of overawed with was Carlos, actually.
The first
time I met him. Years ago in London, and he gave me one of these cigarillos to smoke. That's when Carlos and I both smoked, so a long time ago now. And that was a big thrill, sitting, you know, standing talking to Carlos and smoking cigarillos with him.
Right.
So Carlos is the only guy that's really meant a lot to me to work with.
Yeah. Brilliant, brilliant. So like you say, it's really fitting that if this is to be your last Dread, then it's with him.
Yeah, I'm really happy about that. Okay. You know, getting a high with Carlos.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, thanks for talking to us, Gordon, about El Maldito. It's been brilliant to hear from both you and Carlos. I'm really looking forward to how the strip pans out.
Yeah, me too. Okay, thanks, Mike.
Cheers now. Well, thanks again to Gordon and Carlos for talking to us. As I mentioned at the beginning, and one of the other stories that's starting in Judge Dredd magazine 361 next week is Storm Warning, which is a brand new series created by Leah Moore, John Repian, and one of our newer artists, Tom Foster, which is set in the Britain of Judge Dredd's world, which is called Britsit. And it's all about the supernatural how that plays out when you as a judge can speak to the dead. Now, joining us on Skype all the way from Liverpool are Leah and John. Well, thanks very much for joining us on the Thrillcast, guys.
Thanks for having us, Mike.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
Well, nice to speak to you.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Lovely to be here.
So you've got this new series in the Judge Dredd magazine, Storm Warning. Just tell us a bit about it. What's the elevator pitch?
Elevator pitch is Britsit Side Division cop gets sent on fairly routine kind of errand, mm-hmm. I guess.
That doesn't sound that exciting.
It sounds like routine errand. I know, but didn't
somebody goes about their day.
Yeah, they go about their day and then they go home and they go to bed.
That's
pretty much it. No, go on then. You.
It's Judge Lillian Storm of Britsit Side Division. She's a cop. She's somebody who doesn't work well with others, doesn't play well with others. They've tried to partner up a few times. Partners never seem to work out. And she is sent on a new assignment, which is that two other side division officers, judges, have been sent to collect something and they have not come back. So she has got to go and look for those two judges and go and look for the thing, but she is not allowed to know what the thing is that she is looking for.
Right, okay. Now, Britsit, for those listeners who don't know, is the Britain of Judge Dredd's world, and although they have judges, they are slightly different, and stories such as Armitage and Strange and Dark have all explored this particular world. What's special about Storm Warning that you're bringing out about Britain? What kind of Britain are you revealing in the future?
We wanted to sort of put some of the local weird back into it, I guess, because the future is kind of all very exciting and everything, but if you're going to do it in Britain, then what is British is that it's very old and knobbly and gnarly, and there's a lot of layers to stuff. So even if half of it's submerged in a kind of post, you know, apocalyptic flood, then the bits that stuck up would still have weird stuff, sort of, you know, layers to them. So I guess that's why we thought it'd be fun to do Psy Division, because you can, if you've got the Psy Division, then they can kind of tap into that kind of
the British weirdness. That's the thing we want to go for, the which, you know, obviously 2000 AD is full of anyway, whether it's set in Britain or not. But yeah, so
I thought you just meant the contributors. Is that not?
we certainly have a few weird ones of those, it has to be said.
It is rich with British weirdness.
But yeah, so we're leaning more towards the kind of the John Smith verse, the John Smith Britsit than anyone else's, because that is kind of, he taps into the kind of the Fortean stuff and all that sort of weird stuff, which is right up our street. So yeah, hopefully, I think sometimes Britsit, the Britsit stories are always great, all of them, but they come across as a little bit patchy in terms of what Britsit is like, which is cool. It's nice to be able to switch it up between things, but hopefully ours tie into sort of the John Smith stuff a bit better, and are building on that rather than kind of going off and doing something completely different.
Sure. It's interesting that so much of Mega City 1 has been revealed, obviously, over the last years, because it's been Judge Dredd has been running constantly. But with Britsit, there's still so much to explore, because even a series like Armitage, which has been established for so long, because it was one of the earlier stories in the Judge Dredd magazine, there's still so many elements of that world that just haven't been mapped out in any way, shape or form. Was it more of a kind of sandbox for you guys to just, you know, like you say, just explore?
Yeah, really. And we basically the sort of I suppose, yeah, it's because that it hasn't been mapped out or, you know, nailed down, really. Mm. And then if you, you know, within the confines of the sort of the judge, you know, it's basically sort of, it's like having a really fun kind of science fiction supernatural police procedural, which is just about the most fun you could have as a writer, I think, because you know, if you have a police procedural, you get the excitement of doing proper cases that people have to actually look into, and that gives you a nice kind of format for it all to slot into. And then with the extra kind of with it being such a big loose kind of unnailed down world to have it happening, it's just masses of fun. So we thought we'd try having a really difficult to get along with and unpleasant kind of, not unpleasant, but like she's not a people person, really. Mm-hmm. So that makes it loads of fun to write as well. We've really
but yeah, saying about in terms of mapping out kind of Britsit itself, I mean, I don't think we weren't consciously doing that, but now I think about it, what we've done is we've with each different section, we've kind of done a different bit of terrain kind of thing. We've kind of tried to show as many different, go as far out of Britsit as we can, and then go right into Britsit, and just to kind of, yeah, just to have fun with kind of pushing right to the borders of it and making it seem like a fleshed out sort of three-dimensional place.
Yeah. Now you've mentioned your interest in Fortean. Now, John, you've written articles for Fortean Times, which are always fascinating. Was there anything you wanted to include in the story? Any kind of British weirdness that you thought, actually, no, that's a little bit too weird?
Oh no, definitely not too weird. if people are familiar with the stuff that I do write for Fortean Times, then there's a great big blob of that stuck in the middle of all of this. Don't worry about that.
No giants as yet.
All right. Oh, that's a shame.
But yeah, no, we can pitch that to Tharg next time. Yeah.
Well, we have just, you know, we did have Vikings versus Trolls running for quite a while, so I think I've kind of done me giants in 2018 a little bit.
We'll let you off. Yeah. That then. But yeah, no, it's that's the great thing, because I think basically I think Britsit in kind of you know, historically has been used as like a great chance for British 2008, like for the people that write and draw it, to kind of go poke a bit of fun at themselves and at each other, and kind of go like, oh well, you know, because you're so busy with like Mega City 1 and all the judges and everything, you can have loads of fun with that and pack as much kind of action kind of you know, it's really kind of American and sort of stylized, and everything's very kind of full on. And the idea that there is this kind of fusty, tweedy kind of version of it with people eating biscuits and kind of, you know what I mean? It's the wonderful, the Britsit is brilliant, just because you think like, oh, it's like all that, but in the kind of a bit crap and nerdy kind of version of it. So like, I think one of the main judge that they meet, like, he's not got his helmet on, and he's not got it, even his suit's not done up properly, he's kind of a bit kind of sloppy, and not taking things quite as seriously as probably should be, and I think that's kind of that's, you know,
yeah, there's a bit of that, isn't there?
That's fun.
It's interesting that you bring up that point, because of course John Wagner and Alan Grant have always had that element of taking the mickey out of Scotland a little bit, you know, when you have stories like Kenny Who and things like that. Have you taken the opportunity in Storm Warning to take the mickey out of, say, for example, somewhere like Liverpool or somewhere like Northampton?
Not so much Liverpool, but okay. I think there is actually it's not exactly a dig, but it's kind of it's like the strangeness of the East Midlands is quite that's quite you know, or the sort of the East Coast, definitely. Yeah. Like, you know, the I think that it's that kind of, we're both huge fans of M.R. James, and that is the kind of you know, the, like, oh, I'll just check in at this bed and breakfast, it'll be completely fine, and then it all kind of, if you that kind of like, oh no, everything's actually secretly horrible, but it doesn't look it because you're just in a normal place. And I think that Britain has got a, you know, British literature has got a great history of putting kind of oddness in a way that doesn't kind of, it doesn't jump out and get you exactly, it's just kind of there. And I think we're enjoying having a chance at kind of putting that into the whole kind of Britsit world, because I think it definitely belongs there. I mean, that's the strange and dark kind of, you know, that's
yes it. Yeah, so, yeah,
but we're enjoying playing in that kind of,
yeah,
I mean, I think the three sort of certainly at this time in 2080's existence, the three most kind of influential authors are on the kind of series that we're seeing coming up are people like M.R. James, Arthur Machen, and also, you know, John Wyndham. We were talking to Ian Edgington in the last episode about John Wyndham, about how all these kind of British influences just kind of seem to mill around in 2000 AD while we're busy taking the mickey out of the Americans.
Yeah, completely. I think that's the kind of we know what actually, you know, like all the sort of the big guns and the big buildings and the kind of the satire and everything is all, it's really appealing to us, because it's kind of, we're very good at like saying what other people are like, oh, they're like this, they're like this, you know, this big kind of unwieldy kind of civilization. But I think when it comes to trying to creep ourselves and each other out, then definitely those are the kind of, you know, John Wyndham, or, you know, those kind of just the I don't know if it's more psychological or if it's more just kind of, we just, I don't know, we know what buttons to press. So I think that's the, I'm not surprised at all that that's what Ian and the guys have been saying as well.
Because I mean, we I really realised quite how on the nose we are with it, to be honest. But you know, kind of that list you're saying, James and everybody, there's obviously, we've got to name quite a few judges as we're going through it, and if people look at the names of the judges, then there's definitely some familiar names cropping up.
Yeah,
right, okay. But let's
next best thing about being a 2000 AD writer is getting to name things after people. I don't know if anybody realizes that that is like one of the main, like as soon as you get to write something for 2000 AD or the magazine, you're like, oh, amazing. So what's this building going to be called? it's too much fun. We're only in it for the puns. We don't even need the paycheck, really. It's just the puns.
Hey, Simon Spurrier's based his entire career on puns, let's face it. So, you know, we're down with that. Let's talk a little bit about your working relationship, because we don't have many kind of writing duos beyond Wagner and Grant in 2080 history. Is it one of those things where you kind of play it by ear, or does someone handle the plotting and someone the dialogue, or does it switch around? How do you work together?
At the moment, I think before the kids, we were very much a kind of groovy, kind of equal. We just go for a walk in the park and maybe like toss around a few ideas and maybe have a coffee. It's all very groovy. And now, since we've had the children, we're both just like a pair of screaming maniacs. So if anybody comes up with a story, then the other one's like, yes, yes, type that up immediately now. I'm going to hold on to the children while you type it. Ah, they're escaping. Type faster, type faster. So John came up with, like, he said that he had a couple of ideas for to pitch to Tharg, like sort of hanging about, and so I was like, yes, you know, pitch all of those, do all of that, quick, and it got commissioned. But so at the moment, one of us will more likely do plotty stuff, and then the other one will kind of, I basically, this one, John had the idea for it and kind of fleshed it out, and then I've been doing the layouts for it, and we've both been doing the typing on it. But it's funny you should say, actually, that the this kind of, you know, the writing partnerships, but I know that Emma Beebe and Gordon Rennie,
of course,
they are about to have a baby any minute, I imagine.
Yeah.
So I think that it's really interesting when I, because I'm working with Emma on Gail Simone's Swords of Sorrow project, that her amazing thing she's doing for Dynamite, and I said to Emma, oh wow, so you and Gordon work together, and you know. And now you're going to have kids as well. And I was like, if you need any middle of the night, like very specific kind of advice on any of that, because I think that they're the only people that are in the exact same position as us. So yeah. I imagine that you'll find us hunched together in a convention bar, like kind of crying on each other at some point.
The most sleep deprived people in comics.
Yes, just going, how do we do this? We're idiots. So yeah, no.
But we did, our system used to be a lot more, as Leah said, it was sort of, basically we took twice as long as any single writer would, because we kind of went over everything twice and we
made sure that it was all...
When we could afford to do that, and now we have more of a sort of, like a production line kind of system, where we're kind of, one person does one bit of it and it gets handed over to the other person, and you know, we're still not much quicker because we're loads busier than we were then, but it's working, and we've been writing together so long now that we're kind of adaptable to it. So
And I think when we get the chance to actually work, we are quicker, I think, but it's just that we don't get the chance to work.
We
like do something in the afternoon instead of like 2 weeks, but the other weeks we're just changing bums. And,
Let's talk about Tom Foster. Tom was an artist that we discovered through the 2080 portfolio competition at Thought Bubble. Exactly the same route that Daniel Dyer, who we spoke to in the last episode, got his break with 2000 AD. What's it been like working with fresh meat, as it was?
It's been really interesting, actually, because he's fantastic artist, and he is so full of actual I'm not going to say this in like a cynical old woman way, but he is still full of the joys of actually getting to do the job and working out how to do stuff, and you know what, basically it's really exciting, just because he's not kind of got it all worked out and got everything completely pat. And, you know, like if you get a really, really kind of veteran artist on a job, you know that they're going to have
not just an opinion about how a page should be laid out, but they're going to go, ah, well, what you want to do is, and it's going to be, whereas he's really responded to our script with his own kind of, ah, well, I thought maybe this might work and I thought that might work. And it's been really much more back and forth than we would normally have, to be honest. But normally we kind of send a script off and then we see pages, and unless anything jumps out as a great big sort of howling mistake, we're like, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, that's cool. And then that's it. So, but he's been back and forth with emails and layouts and what do you think of this? And he's been really, it's been lovely actually to have that kind of back and forth with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not that, you know, that if you're working with, you know, when we were working with Steve Yolan doing Black Shuck, you know, Steve is brilliant at what he does, and he would come back and his layouts would be different to how he'd done stuff, only slightly, but he'd know how stuff would work better. And we would never argue with that, of course. We wouldn't, because we know that he's right, because that's how he does it.
Yeah.
You know, the other extreme would be somebody who was very unsure of what they're doing. And what's been nice with Tom is he's trying things out. You can see somebody who's actually, he's excited to be doing it, and he's really like coming back to you and saying, you know, wouldn't this work better if I did this, or could we make it like this? And so, yeah, it's he's really not had the fun knocked out of him yet.
But by God, we'll get there in the end.
Yeah. Like a challenge, don't we?
And that's all we've got time for. I'd love to chat to you guys more, but we've got so much to fit in this episode. Thanks so much for coming on the Thrillcast, really looking forward to reading Storm Warning.
Oh, thanks for having us. It's always a pleasure. And if you need, you know, need us again, just ask.
Just holler. Yeah. I'll call you on the Nerve Centre hotline.
Thank you.
Take care, guys. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
Great to hear from Leah and John about Storm Warning. Of course, a couple of episodes ago, we talked to Daniel Dyer, who's the newest 2000 AD art droid, who got his big break at the Thought Bubble Convention, which takes place in Leeds every November. A previous winner has not only had their break at 2000 AD, but also is now drawing Storm Warning. Tom Foster, welcome to the Thrillcast, Tom.
Hello, thank you.
All right, no worries. Tell us a bit about how you came to be at 2000 AD through the portfolio competition.
Right, well, I think, I don't know this for absolute certain, but I think I entered the first one. I thought maybe that it started a couple of years earlier, but I think the first year it started was the first year I entered, and I came second that year, and sort of thought, and that was kind of what sort of really sort of spurred me on to think, well, okay, I didn't win, but, you know, I've not really entered anything of this type before, so second place, pretty good.
Yeah.
And I came back next year, and same thing happened. So as much as it was kind of a dispiriting experience at the time,
yeah,
it did make me think, well, if I can come second 2 years in a row, then, you know, then that's, at least I'm consistent.
Yeah.
So I came back a third year, and I got it, and that was great. And I did a little 4-page terror tale last year, called Done Deal with Alec Worley, who I've seen it, I'd met at convention and stuff, and we're quite good friends, and, he's lovely, so I was really glad that I got a chance to work with him right away. I was really pleased with all the work I did for that. I was, because it was, you know, a short story, and I was new, you know, there was very little pressure on the actual, from a professional, but obviously there was pressure, I was putting a lot of pressure on myself, but it wasn't like, you know, I suddenly had 4 days to turn around a 4-page story. So I really got a chance to do what I consider at the time to certainly be my best work on it. Hopefully I've kind of done some things since then that are a little more impressive. But I really genuinely still like that stuff. I look back at it and I kind of go, you were clearly in a good place for that.
And how did you feel when Tharg offered you the work on Storm Warning?
Well, that was, I mean, I kind of alter the memory of that moment in my head. Right. Because when it happened, obviously, like, I just got an email from him, and it was very sudden. So, you know, there was no build up to it. But at the time, I remember I was listening to the song Rosalita by Bruce Springsteen a lot. And whenever I play that back in my head, there's a bit in that song where the music kind of builds up and then just kind of stops for a second. like in kind of that kind of ecstatic sort of suspense.
Yeah.
And then just starts again jubilantly.
Yeah.
And so in the film version of my life, which will at some point inevitably be made, that's the moment that will occur. That music will be playing, and then suddenly I'll see the email, and everything will stop, and then I'll start dancing around like a madman.
brilliant. Well, the terror tale that you did, obviously it's a horror based type of story, and your artwork really seemed to suit it. Now, obviously, Storm Warning has that kind of supernatural feel to it. Is it a strip that has played to your strengths?
Yes, I think so. I don't want to say that it could be interpreted as being a bit egotistical, I suppose, if I say that it played to my strengths too much, because that implies, like, yes, I was the best man for the job, definitely. but it was. I think what I liked about it most, and what I liked about that terror tale as well, was that I tend to be quite slavish in a sort of form of realism. When I'm drawing, it's not photorealism, but it's a sort of comic book realism, and so. Like, when I get a story that's kind of horror-based or whatever, the emphasis I put on it is not so much towards the kind of weird or supernatural. It's the grounding of reality, because it's that makes the thing scary, if you see what I mean. The realer it is, the kind of weirder and scarier it is, in a way, just from my kind of own point of view. So I've kind of tried to keep that realism, that sort of comic book realism, very much going, so that there's an undertone of drama. But at the same time, I don't want it to be too kind of, I don't want it to be something that people read and genuinely feel bad, you know. I like it to be entertaining. I've sort of got I like the John Carpenter approach of, ultimately, I'm there to entertain people. And if they, you know, if they get something, some kind of emotion that pleases them out of it, then that's great.
And as a new art droid, having, you know, just done a terror tale, was it slightly daunting to then be handed a multi-part story?
Yes.
Right. A straightforward answer.
It was daunting. It wasn't daunting right away, I think. My overwhelming feeling at the time was just, you know, I am now a professional. This is what I've, you know, been wanting to do all my life and everything. And, you know, and I think it was when I realized that, you know, I'm not the fastest artist in the world. And when I'd been doing stuff for conventions before, and for portfolio reviews or competitions and things, it was always a very short burst of very kind of motivated work, which even then took like quite a long time to sort of prepare, and I would use quite a lot of photo reference and all kinds of things. I would try and orchestrate it perfectly. And then to sort of realize that you've got a kind of day-to-day commitment, because after a convention, after I'd done one of those short bursts, I would be floored for weeks afterwards.
Sure.
And it's quite pathetic, really, to do four or five pages and then be, you know, a hermit for a month.
Yeah.
I really realized after that, you know, both that wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
But it also, like, that period afterwards, of kind of recovery, that I still had to figure out a way to account for all that sort of you know, adrenaline or whatever. So I'm that's currently the point I'm at now, is getting to the point where I can, where the thought of doing it on a, you know, regular basis isn't daunting anymore. And it's just a job, a very pleasant and enjoyable job, but not something which, you know, the thought of freaks me out. So that's the long answer, yes.
And in terms of Storm Warning as a story, are there any aspects of what John and Leah have written that, that you've really enjoyed getting your teeth into?
Yes. I really like the lead characters, sort of things about the lead character that particularly the things that I get a little bit of influence over. I know that's a bit selfish, but like the I don't know. I don't even know how much I can say about the lead character, because
they aren't introduced
until some way into the first episode, really.
We've already talked to John and Leah a little bit about the lead character. So if we just say to anyone listening, there are spoilers.
Okay.
Great. So you know, proceed at your own caution. There we go. Gloves are off. Make merry, Tom.
Okay, I'll try and be sort of nauseatingly general about my, you know, like Christian Bale talking about a new Batman movie or something. Obviously, that's quite a dated reference, isn't it? But, you know, but like somebody, you know, every interview you hear them talking about, you know, I really like the opportunity to explore this new side of Batman. I'm like, just tell me if the Joker's in it. the lead character, Judge Storm, first of all, I'm really glad that this is kind of essentially two stories now that I've worked on that have female leads to some extent. The short story did really as well, and I really like that, because I you know, there is a kind of, not so much Judge Dredd in 2008 because there's a lot of good female characters there, but like, you know, the comics market in general is kind of saturated by male leads and their sort of interesting stories or whatever, and you don't get too much in terms of variety on the female lead front. And you know, so I liked the opportunity to work on a character who was female but wasn't defined by their gender, because I've never really been somebody who draws women that way. I don't have one standard way of drawing women.
Yeah.
So you know, it's always based on the character, and I just love it. Even just stuff like get the opportunity to like give her the kind of haircut that I thought she would have. I mean, there's things there are specific things about her hair that are mentioned in the script, but you know, just to have that little bit of influence and kind of and give her a bit of an edge I think she's somebody who the other characters in the story have kind of quite a sort of high regard for. Judge Campbell, who appears in the first installment, he's, you know, somebody who's been in the Psy division and Brits it all of his life pretty much, and has seen some stuff, and I think he kind of admires Judge Storm's kind of emotional distance in a way, because it's taken him a long time to get there.
Yeah.
So I like being able to kind of get my teeth into the actual character of the people, because that's where all the sort of a lot of the storytelling, the real sort of storytelling, comes from. You've got your framework of your story, but all the real kind of interesting stuff is in the characters. That's the kind of stuff that I've really enjoyed working on.
And what's your working relationship been like with John and Leah? Because they're fairly seasoned hands at comic book writing now. But you're a fresh face. Was there anything that they did that particularly helped you bring your A game?
Yeah. They've been very receptive, because I have sort of, I tend to get a very clear picture in my head when I read a script, of how I want the visuals to play out. Mm. And sometimes that involves, you know, a little bit of footering around with how the action's laid out in the script. But which could seem to some people to be a very kind of presumptuous and sort of diva thing to do for a newcomer. But they're not like that at all. They have a sort of professional reserve where they can say, you know, oh, you know, either that idea works better, or, you know, it might be better to stick to the script and be kind of honest about it, but not precious about it. And that's great. And they're also, I spoke to Steve Yeovil, when he was, I don't know if he was doing press, but he was speaking on Facebook about Black Shuck, that story he did with them, last year, I think it was. And, I mentioned to him about the fact that I was working with, John and Leo now, and I said how great it was that they give you so much kind of space in the, you know, on a page to tell the story, and they don't, you know, they pace it in a way where you can really communicate what's going on without having to shove a million things on the page. And if you want to shove things in for texture or to help the story, you can. But they really allow you a chance, and I could see that in Black Shuck, you know, even though I hadn't seen the script for it, I could see that there was room to breathe for him. Mm. And he agreed that it was a really great quality that they had, because you don't have a lot of space in something like 2080 or Judge Dredd, those kind of anthology titles. You've got to tell a lot of story quite quickly.
Yeah.
But they managed to just portion it up in a very elegant way.
Okay, brilliant, brilliant. Well, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for, but sure. It's been fantastic to talk to you, Tom. Thanks so much. And hopefully, beyond Storm Warning, we're going to see you a lot more in 2080, because I love your work, and I love the fact that that you're a fresh face that's come to us through something like the portfolio competition.
Well, you know, I can only agree with you in that hope. But, you know, at least I'll maybe just sort of come and sit in the corner while you guys go out for a drink and pretend I'm part of the gang.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much for coming on the Thrillcast.
No problem. See you later. Thanks very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
And I want to thank all of our guests for talking to us this week about Judge Dredd magazine 361, which is out next week from all good thrill merchants and digitally from 2000AD and the 2000AD app. Talking about the app, if you use the 2000AD Apple Newsstand app, then you may have noticed a slight change to how we're doing things. We're actually transitioning to a brand new standalone app within iTunes. The Newsstand app will continue, but it will be exclusively just 2000AD. So if you want to be able to download graphic novels, Judge Dredd magazine, the specials, and the free comics, then make sure you go onto iTunes and search for 2000AD and download our brand new app. Log in with the same details and you should be able to download all the same purchases. So that's the first part of our Judge Dredd magazine 361 special on the 2000AD Thrillcast. Please join us next week when we're going to be talking to the massive creative minds behind Lawless and Demon Nick. It's going to be a great week, and we're even going to have a little competition for all you dreadheads out there. So make sure you join us next week for the second half of our magazine special. Now, are you reading the galaxy's greatest comic? 2000AD is in orbit every Wednesday from all good newsagents and comic book stores. 2000AD is also available digitally. You can get PDF copies, which are DRM-free, from our website at www.2000adonline.com, or you can download the free 2000AD app for Apple and Android devices. Now, you get that by searching for 2000AD in iTunes and the Google Play Store. There's also the Judge Dredd magazine, which is published in print and digital every month with more pages, more Dredd-centric stories, special features, and a bagged reprint magazine featuring forgotten 2000AD classics. And don't forget that our graphic novels, including absolute timeless classics like Strontium Dog, Ace Trucking, Flesh, Judge Dredd, Slain, Robo Hunter, and many, many more are also available digitally through our webshop and app. We're on social media with the latest announcements, competitions and freebies. Search on Facebook and Google Plus for 2000AD. If you're on Instagram, we're Insta2000AD, and you can follow us on Twitter, where we are at 2000AD. Splundig ver Thrig, Earthlets.